So welcome back, or for those who just joined us, welcome to the afternoon session. Sorry for the delay, we'll start 10 minutes late and we'll shift the talk 10 minutes later. And our next speaker is Matteo Plebani, Assistant Professor at University of Turin. He will talk about predicative subject matters.
Okay. Thanks for inviting me. It's a great honor for me to be here today. And you asked me to talk about something related to Yablo's work. And, well, the title of Yablo's work, of Yablo's latest book, is aboutness. So we are going to talk about aboutness. And what is aboutness? Fundamental question. In the book, we find this definition. Aboutness is the relation that meaningful items bear to whatever it is that they are on or off, or that they address or concern. And this raises a very natural question, which is, which meaningful items? Okay, what are the things that have a subject matter, that are on or off something? And, well, the standard answer, the answer that we find in the book, is that sentences are the things that have a subject matter, that are about something. And we read that sentences have aboutness properties, if anything does. And apparently, a referee asked the question which I mentioned at the very beginning. So a referee asked what subject matters are off on Yablo's account. And the reply is, I think, Yablo says, that the answer is sentences in context. Okay, so I'm pretty happy with the idea that sentences have aboutness properties. But this doesn't mean that they are the only things that have aboutness properties. So think for a moment about the cases in which we use expressions like about or subject matter in ordinary life. Well, we say things like that books are on topics, that conversations are on a certain subject. Conferences have a subject matter. These conferences is about Yablo's work. And to borrow an example from Naomi Osorio Kupferblum, we have a subject line in emails. So it seems that emails are about something, and you should declare what the email is about. And so there are linguistic expressions, linguistic items that are larger than sentences and that should have aboutness properties. And I also think that items that are smaller than sentences, for instance, predicates, should have a subject matter, should be about something. So for instance, I think that red is about color, round is about shape. And we naturally recognize that certain predicates go together. So red, blue, green go together, they form a group. Why? Well, maybe because they are about the same thing. And this is the summary of the entire talk. So what I want to say is that there is sentences have a subject matter, predicates have a subject matter, and there is a relation between, there is a connection between what a predicate is about and what the sentence that contains that predicate is about. So the summary of the talk is that the ball is red, is about the color of things, the topic of the color of the ball. The ball is red, the topic of this sentence is the color of the ball, partly because the topic of red is the color of things. So I already told you this, but just to emphasize the point of the talk, what I'm looking for is an account of subject matter that assigns a subject matter to predicates as well as to sentences, that connects the subject matter of a sentence with the subject matter of the predicates it contains. And As an extra, I want the subject matter of a sentence and the subject matter of the predicate it contains to be the same sort of entity. This might sound a little bit obscure at the beginning, but the idea is I don't want one thing to be a set and another thing to be a function from that set to something else. No, I want a kind of uniform treatment of subject matter. Subject matters of sentences and subject matter of predicates are the same sort of things. This is, well, we can talk about in the Q&A why I'm so attached to this point. And I want to stress that this idea of assigning a subject matter to predicates marks a point of departure for standard truthmaker semantics. It doesn't mean that truthmaker semantics cannot do what I want a theory of subject matter to do, but I want just to stress that a certain way to do truthmaker semantics doesn't assign a subject matter to predicates. So I take the fundamental insight of truthmaker semantics to be that there is a connection between the subject matter of a sentence and the way it is true or false, or the reasons why that sentence is true or false. So the idea is that snow is white or it isn't, and grass is green or it isn't, are true in the same circumstances, in the same possible words, but for different reasons. Grass is green or it isn't is true because grass is green, or because grass is not green, and snow is white or it isn't is true for a different reason, either that snow is white or that snow isn't white. And this should account for the fact that we perceive these two tautologies to be about different subject matter. One is about the grass and one is about the snow. And that's all fine. I think that's great. That's an important point that truthmaker semantics has taught us. But I also want to point out that usually this is hyper simplified. But usually, if you look at the semantic machinery, what you have in truthmaker semantics is a function that assigns a subject matter to atomic formulas. Usually you have a set of spaces and you have a function that assigns two subset of this domain to each atomic formulas. And then you have a recursive procedure to build the subject matter of complex formula out of the subject matter of the components. So to simplify brutally, the idea is that you have this function and you stipulate that the subject matter of the negation is the same as the subject matter of the negatum. So negation doesn't change the subject matter. And then if the subject matter of A binary connective B is going to be the combination of the subject matter of A and the subject matter of B, well, this operation of combination is denoted by the plus sign. And there is many ways in which you can explain what this combination is. But the point is, anyway, here you don't have the predicates that are part of a sentence don't play any role in the assignment of a subject matter to... the predicates that are part of an atomic sentence don't have a role in the way that the subject matter is assigned to an atomic sentence. At least, this is if you do the things in the standard, most basic way. And so I'm trying to push truthmaker semanticists to do more. And I want to show you how I would connect the subject matter of a sentence with the subject matter of the predicates it contains. So it's just trying to push you to do the same thing. I'm not saying that the way I'm going to present to assign a subject matter to predicates as well as to sentences is the best way, nor that it is the only way. There might be many ways, but this is one way to do it that is at least pretty simple. So I'm going to say that predicates and sentences are about aspects of the world, and that predicates are also about aspects of things. And as I said already many times, that there is a connection between the the subject matter of a sentence and the subject matter of the predicates it contains. So I should clarify what I mean when I talk about aspects. Now, think about aspects of a domain of objects. Don't have to be aspects of the world. Think about just a domain of objects, like this one. Suppose that those are your objects, the objects that you care about. What is an aspect of those things? Well, things can be identical or different with respect to an aspect. So to each aspect corresponds a relation, the relation of being identical under that aspect. And, well, if you think about it like this, color, the color aspect is this relation, the relation that that puts in the same box things that have the same color, and this is the shape aspect. So an aspect of a domain of object can be identified with a relation that that holds between objects that are identical under that aspect. So it is an equivalence relation, or if you want the corresponding partition. A partition of a domain is a way of dividing the objects in that domain into subsets of that domain, such that each object belongs to one and only one of those subsets. Okay, and sometimes Diablo say that this conception of subject matter, is the conception of a subject matter, the conception of an aspect as a system of differences. And this sounded like a very French thing to say, that an aspect is a system of differences. So if you want, it is a system of alternatives. It is a set of alternatives. Okay, that's less loaded. And you can also think, and today in his beautiful talk, Daniel Rothschild emphasized this, you can also think about an aspect as a question. So color corresponds to the question, which color, or if you want, what is the color of the object I'm thinking about, and shape corresponds to the question, which shape. And you can identify a question with the set of its answer. So the question, which color, can be identified with the set red, blue, green, yellow, and so on and so forth. So with the set of colors, with the set of answers to the... And these things, red, blue, green, are properties, so subsets of the original domain. So the set of all the answers to the question, which color, is going to be this object. So the very thing that we say that the aspect color was above. So it's just another perspective on the same way of defining aspects. And the cool thing about thinking about aspects as questions is that if you think about them in this way, then you can define many interesting relations between aspects. So for instance, what does it mean for a question to include a question, another question as a part? Well, it means that if you answer the larger question, you thereby answer the smaller one. So what did you do during the weekend? I think this is an example from Diablo, includes what did you do on Saturday? Because if I tell you exactly what I did during the whole weekend, thereby I tell you also what I did on Saturday. If I tell you what is the color and the shape of an object, thereby I tell you what is the color of that object. And note that in this way, we can also define this operation of combining two questions. Once we have defined parthood, we can define the sum of two questions as the smallest question that contains both. And if we think about questions as partitions and therefore as equivalence relation, well, the combination of two equivalence relation is going to be their intersection, because the intersection of two equivalence relations is an equivalence relation, stronger than both. And of course, once we have parthood, we can define overlap, and we can also define orthogonality. What it means that a certain topic or a certain question is orthogonal to another, Well, that every answer to the first question is compatible with every answer to the other question. So shape and color are two orthogonal aspects if every shape is compatible with every color. Compatibility is symmetric, so you don't need to say much more. And I think this way of thinking about aspects offers also a nice perspective of why we might have a system of aspects. So what is a very effective strategy to address a complex problem? Well, to break it down into simpler problems in such a way that once you have solved the simpler problem, by combining the solution to the simpler problems, you get a solution to the original hard problem. And you can apply this strategy with questions as well. In order to answer a complex question, you break it down into simpler questions, you answer them, and then combining those answers, you get an answer to the original question. So for instance, if I'm trying to remember how did a certain letter token look like, I might still ask her, what was the font, what was the size, what was, I don't know, was it in bold or not? Was it in italics or not? And when you try to do a sketch of a face, apparently they ask you a question like this. Instead of asking you the question, "What describe me the face that you saw," they ask you first one question about, I don't know, one aspect of the face, then one question to an aspect that is sort of orthogonal to that. And this is like locating a point in the Cartesian plane by asking first what is the x coordinate and then what is the y coordinate. It's not. Okay. So we also have thinking in this way about aspects is nice. And moreover, and you might have thought that I was going that way, aspects, as I define them, are very similar to subject matters as David Lewis defined them. So for Lewis, a subject matter is a partition of the logical space. So if you want, is an aspect of the logical space, if you take aspects as I define them. Or, as usual, I will talk about aspects and subject matter as equivalence relations, sometimes as partitions, and I hope you can... this is not going to confuse you. So the number of stars for Lewis, number of stars is subject matter, we can talk about it, is this partition. So it is the set that contains one cell, one block with all the words in which there are no stars, one block in which we have all the words with exactly one star, and so on and so forth. Now, think about what this is. This is a set of sets of possible words. But sets of possible words are propositions. So this thing here that you see is a set of propositions. Which propositions? Well, those propositions that are answers to an interrogative question. How many stars are there? So again, you can also see this partition as the set of all the possible answers to a certain interrogative question, which means that you can think about this partition as a question. So aspects are questions, subject matters are questions, everything is, not everything, but, okay, they're both questions. That's how I'm going to think about them. And this way, the partition-based conception of subject matter stands in contrast to another way of thinking about subject matter as parts of the world. You might think that when you're talking about pizza, you're talking about something very concrete, not an abstract object like a partition. So, and to a certain extent, this is right. Or when you're talking about the snow, you're talking about the numerological sum of all the snow there is. And some subject matters are part-based. So for instance, the 17th century is an example of a part-based subject matter. There is a great paper by Humberston on this. And the idea is that two words are equivalent with respect to the subject matter, the 17th century, if part of one word, if the 17th century of one word is a perfect duplicate of the 17th century of the other, or if they both lack a 17th century. So we have a garbage cell in the partition where we put all the words that don't have a counterpart of the 17th century. But not all subject matters are path-based. So as Lewis says here, maybe an ingenuous ontologist could devise a theory saying that each word has its number of stars part, such that the number of stars parts of two words are exact duplicates if and only if those two words have equally many stars. Maybe, and maybe not. We shouldn't rely on ontology. We shouldn't rely on that ontological assumption. Rather, we should say that being exactly alike with respect to a subject matter may or may not be a matter of duplication between the parts of words which that subject matter picks out. I think this can be applied more generally to aspects. So suppose that two molecules have the same number of atoms. It doesn't mean that it's not immediate to say, well, therefore, there must be a part of one molecule that is an exact duplicate of part of another. Or think about two objects made of completely different materials that have the same length. It's not immediate that there must be a part of one object that is a perfect duplicate of part of another. Maybe length is an abstract part of any object, but it's not obvious. So when you have path-based subject matter, it's easy to define the corresponding partition. Okay? But the other way around is more problematic. So the partition-based conception of subject matter seems more general. And I think that the partition conception of aspects is more general. Now, what I want to say is to focus on a certain kind of equivalence relations on the logical space. So suppose, consider the equivalence relation that holds between two words when they have the same domain, the same objects exist in both words, and each object has the same color in one word as in the other. I'm going to refer to color as this equivalence relation. And it is an equivalence relation on possible words. And similarly for shape. And I want to say that you can think about colors, about the subject matter color in two ways. You can think about it as an aspect in intention, by which I mean a function that assigns to every possible word a mapping that takes each object in that word to its color. Or if you want, you can think about color as a function that assigns to every possible word a partition of the domain of that word according to the color aspect of the thing. But you can also think about color as an equivalence relation between words. And that is, I think it's called the kernel of the previous function. So it is the equivalence relation that holds when color of W as defined above is identical to color of W1. Now, I promised you that I was going to assign a subject matter to predicates, so let's do that. I've talked about aspects, so what you might expect is that predicates are about aspects of the word. So you might say red is about color, round is about shape. But if you think about it a little bit, color is a very demanding equivalence relation. In order to have the same color, two objects must have exactly the same color. And in order to have the same height, two words must have exactly the same length. You got it. So the idea is that sometimes when we talk about a certain aspect, we are really talking about a certain way to represent or categorize it. So what I want to say is that height in centimeters and height in inches technically are different partitions. Okay, they are not the same set theoretical. They are not the same set, but they have something in common. They are different ways of representing one aspect of reality, height, at some level of granularity or resolution. So we speak about categories to indicate these ways of representing a certain aspect. And there might be different ways to categorize a certain aspect. height in centimeters, height in millimeters, height in micromillimeters are all different ways of categorizing the same aspect. And of course, height is a partition that is a refinement of all of its categories. So if two objects have exactly the same height, they have the same height in centimeters, the same height in millimeters, the same height in inches. So one natural constraint is that in order for a partition to be a category of another partition, the category must be a part of the original aspect. So the aspect must be a refinement of the category. And then there are other requirements. We are thinking about this with my co-author Giuseppe Spolaore. So these are working hypotheses. So one constraint might be that the elements of the partition that is a category are effectively generable. So the idea is that a category should correspond to a question such that you know you can generate the possible answers to that question. You can really write them down. And then there are other requirements. For instance, one that is nice is the idea of preserving certain in-betweenness relation, as we call it. The idea is this one. Suppose that X and Y have the same height in centimeters, and suppose that A and B has the same height in centimeters, and that C has a height, an exact height, that is intermediate between A and B, then C must have the same height in centimeters as A or B. So it's okay to squeeze certain cells of the aspect into the same cell, but then you should, if there is an ordering relation among the cells of the partition, then you should also put together all the cells that were in between the two that you squeezed. And then another requirement is that, for instance, if a certain aspect is the combination of two aspects, like a shape plus color, then the corresponding category should be possible to break it down in two categories of the two original aspects. So this is just to give you a sense of the things we are working on. And here are some examples. Color is an aspect. Basic color in English is a category of that aspect. Car is an aspect, and model of car is a category. Exact location and the Gauss-Kruger zone. Exact location is an aspect. Location according to a certain grid is a category of that aspect. Why is that important? Well, because sometimes you want to say that given that Gaelic and English have different ways of representing the color spectrum, you might want to say that glass is about a different subject matter than blue, because they are about different ways of categorizing that the color aspect. But sometimes you might want to say that they really are about the same thing, because after all, if A and B have exactly the same color, then either blue applies to both of them, or it doesn't apply to any of them. And the same for glass. So both, in a way, both categories supervene on the color aspect as the relation of having the exact same color. Okay, so basically I promised to tell you what predicates are about, and I promised to tell you that predicates and sentences are about the same thing, and I told you that predicates are about Lewisian subject matters. They're also about aspects of things, but they're also about Lewisian subject matter. So I'm going to say that also sentences are about Lewisian subject matters, and then I'm going to connect them. So this is part two, where I tell you a little bit about the subject matter of sentences, and then hopefully the subject matter of a sentence and of its parts are going to be connected. So Lewis has, this is my way of presenting the story. I mean, maybe it's not the only way, but so Lewis has a very nice answer to the question, what sort of things are subject matters? Partitions of the logical space, questions. But he doesn't have a way to, given a sentence, to find, he doesn't give you a recipe that, given a sentence, tells you what is the subject matter of that sentence, what is that sentence about. And the funny thing is that I think that there is an incredibly simple solution to this problem that Lewis himself takes very seriously, and sometimes Iablo seems to think that this, the problem of defining sentential subject matter, is a serious problem for Lewis as well. And I think in the paper that Daniel quoted above, so subject matter modest proposal, and by the way, modest means both that is put forward with humility and also that maybe it is not that good. I mean, so modest in both senses. We try to say, look, if that's the problem, if the problem is given a sentence, find its subject matter. If subject matters are questions, then there is a solution that is pretty simple. Given a sentence, ask yourself, what is the interrogative sentence that you answer by uttering that sentence? Okay. And this connects to the focus profile of the sentence. But let's review the story in a little bit of detail. So I already told you that Lewis doesn't give you a recipe that, given a sentence, returns its subject matter. But he defines an interesting notion, the notion of a sentence being entirely about the subject matter. And the sentence is entirely about its subject matter if its truth value supervenes on that subject matter. This means that if two words are equivalent with respect to the subject matter, to a certain subject matter, then the truth value of the sentence is going to be the same in both words. So, I don't know, Oslo is north of Paris, is entirely about geography because if two words are geographically indistinguishable, well, either the sentence is true in those words or it is false in both words. But the problem is that the property of being entirely about the subject matter is preserved under refinement. So if you take a subject, if sentence A is entirely about the subject matter, then it is also entirely about any subject matter that refines that subject matter. So we have a spectrum of given any sentence A, we have a spectrum of subject matters such that the sentence is entirely about them. And at one extreme, we find the subject matter that corresponds to the relation of identity. So the subject matter that is composed only of singletons, one word per cell. Of course, any sentence is entirely about this subject matter because you cannot find two words in the same cell such that the truth value of the sentence is different in both words. Why? Because you cannot find two words in the same cell. There is only one word per cell. Okay, sorry for the emphasis. At the other extreme, you have what I call the binary subject matter. So the subject matter made up of only two cells, one in which we put all the words in which the sentence is true, and one in which we put all the sentence, all the words in which the sentence is false. By design, sentence A is going to be entirely about that subject matter. But the problem is that if we assign as subject matter of a sentence the what Iablo calls the whatever subject matter, okay, the subject matter that answer any possible question, then if we there is only one of them and there is only one universal subject matter, so if we assign that to every sentence, then it turns out that all the sentences are about the same thing, which is a result that nobody wants. And if we assign to every sentence A the binary subject matter of A, the situation improves, but not that much. For instance, of course, if two sentences are true in the same possible words, then they're going to have the same binary subject matter. But nobody, most people in working on subject matter don't want that they want subject matter to be hyper-intentional, which which wouldn't be the case if the subject matter of a sentence was its binary subject matter. Moreover, a binary partition can refine only the trivial partition, the partition with just one cell, and itself. So this means if A is a binary partition, B is a binary partition, and A refines B, then they are one and the same partition, which is a problem if we want to have interesting inclusion relations between sentential subject matters. And finally, if the question associated with A is whether A is 2, and the question associated with B is whether B is 2, and A can be 2 when B is false, A can be 2 when B is 2, and so on and so forth, all the combinations are represented, that this means that the two subject matters are orthogonal. And you might think this is not a big deal, but think about Fiona is happy, with the emphasis on Fiona, and all is happy. I think you can hear both sentences as answers to the question, who is happy? So I think there might be cases in which two sentences are logically independent, but share the same subject matter. And as I was telling you, we have a recipe to assign to each sentence a subject matter that lies in between these two extremes. And let me start with an example that is different from the ones that I'm going to review. So think about the number of stars is 8. There is a Lewisian subject matter that seems the perfect candidate to the role of the subject matter of this sentence, and that is the number of stars. A Lewisian subject matter that is right in the middle of the spectrum that we showed before. But okay, what we do in the paper is that we associate the sentence Fiona is happy with emphasis, with focus on Fiona, to the question who is happy, because Fiona, if you take just the part with the focus, Fiona is a perfectly legitimate answer to the question who is happy, whereas Fiona is happy, with emphasis on happy, is associated with the question how is Fiona, and finally Fiona is happy is associated with the question whether Fiona is happy or not. And so we didn't invent anything, so as the previous speaker made abundantly clear, these ideas were present in the literature, and in the paper we cite all the people that essentially had the same idea, but our contribution was to show that we can use this idea to solve the problem that Lewis had. So once we have the questions, we can get from those questions to Lewisian subject matters. And now I'm going to stress an important thing. The subject matter of Fiona is happy is what we called Fiona's mood features. And here is a quote from our own paper. This is horrible, but I didn't find another way to explain the point. So our idea is that the subject matter of A is F is that equivalence relation that holds between two words when the individual A has the same relevant features in both words. And the idea is that the reference to relevance is important, because if everything counts as a feature, then for individual A to have the same features as individual B, maybe it must be the case that the two words are identical, and so the relation, the equivalence relation, would turn out to be identity, and we don't want to have that. We want to say that two words agree on the subject matter, the mood of Fiona, when Fiona has the same mood properties in both words. So when Fiona satisfies the same relevant predicates, the same mood relevant predicates in both words. And now that we have assigned the subject matter to predicates, we can define this notion of relevance that we didn't define in the paper. The idea is that two predicates are relevant if they have the same subject matter, be it an aspect or a category. So everything works the same way, essentially, if you take the subject matter of a sentence to be an aspect or a category. So we can be neutral about that, or we can recognize that it is a matter of context. And then you can see that the subject matter of the ball is red is the equivalence relation that holds between two words when the color of the ball is the same in both words. And the subject matter of red is the relation that holds between two words when the subject matter of everything is the same in both words. And the same thing exists in both words. So if you think about subject matters as function, the color of the ball in W is a certain function, and the color of the word is another function, and the color of the ball is really a restriction in the technical sense of the color of the ball. The color of the ball is a restriction of the color of the subject matter, the color. And the idea is that we start with an equivalence relation, and that is given by the predicate, and the function of the singular term, the noun phrase, is to restrict, to make a weaker equivalence relation in which we don't consider all the objects in the world but just one, and in this way the subject matter of the predicate and the subject matter of the sentence that contains that predicate are connected as advertised. If you look at the paper, we prove a result that is still holding, because all we did was define something that we didn't define in the paper via the notion of predicative subject matter. And the result that we proved is that in our construction, every sentence is entirely about its subject matter, which is a natural desideratum. We want that. So essentially, in the interest of time, I'm going to be extremely brief. We were looking for an account that assigns subject matter to predicates as well as to sentences, and that connected the subject matter of a sentence with the subject matter of its subsentential components. And we also wanted sentential subject matters to be the same thing as predicative subject matters. And it looks we found what we were looking for. And again, I'm well aware that there are many limitations in this approach, which I didn't talk about for obvious reason. But the point is more to show you that in our account something can be done and look to see whether the same thing can be done in other accounts. So that's the purpose of the modest proposal, to push a little bit the research on subject matter by having a reference point. So thank you very much, and yes, that's all.